Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. Sit back, relax, and listen to tonight's show. Let's join our host, Ted Odorico, as he introduces tonight's special guest.
All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Season 10 of Golf Talk Live. I'm super excited this evening. It's hard to believe that I've been doing this for 10 years on this Thursday evening show, but here we are with our first show on the season. And I'm super, super excited because I've got a very special guest who's going to be joining me here in just a few moments. But let me first remind everybody, for those of you that might be tuning into the first time tonight, obviously this is a live broadcast that airs typically from 6 to 8 p.m. Central or 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for those of you on the East Coast. But for the first few weeks, usually in the beginning of a season, I just do an hour-long show. It's typically 2 hours. But the first few episodes, like I said, is typically just an hour-long show because we're minusing the Coach's Corner segment, which typically is in this time slot. My special guest interviews are normally on the second half of the show. So we're going to just have an hour show, actually probably just a little bit less than an hour tonight, and I'll tell you a little bit about this evening's guest. But as I said, you can go live. You can listen to it at blogtalkradio.com/Golf Talk Live. Obviously, if you found us, you know where you are. At the end of the show, we'll give you some other great ways that you can tune into the show as well. It's virtually available on all areas of wherever you can listen to any of the podcasts out there. But that'll come at the end of the show, and we'll give you that as well. And for those of you that want to reach out and communicate with me, you can do so by emailing me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. So some of the things that we're going to try to really do this year, I'll just tell you again, for particularly for some of those that are tuning in for the first time, typically what we try to do, or I try to do with the show, is I have, as I mentioned, Coach's Corner, which is a panel discussion that I have every year with a group of fellow professionals, both PGA and some LPGA professionals as well. And we have a panel discussion on a variety of different topics designed to not only inform you of some things, trends maybe going on in the industry, but also maybe to help you overall with your game. And over the years, we've had some folks who have either called in or emailed me personally, and that's why I give you my emails. So if you want to do that, I'm happy to forward some of those questions onto the panel, and we'll bring those tips that you're looking for into the panel discussions. If there's other areas of the game that maybe you're a little confused about as well, we'll try to cover those this season on the Coach's Corner panel. And it's always been a lot of fun. I've had many of the same guys and gals that have been on the Coach's Corner panel come back every year. They really enjoy it. And we usually add a few new ones that want to jump in and throw their hat into the ring, if you will, as well. So make sure you tune for that. And that's going to be starting on March the 3rd. We'll be running a full blog, a broadcast, beginning March 3rd. So that'll be the 6 to 8 p.m. Full schedule, 2-hour broadcast. From 6 to 7 will be the Coach's Corner panel. And then from 7 till 8, and that's Central Time, of course, will be my special guest evening interview. So make sure you do that. And as I said, we're starting Season 10 and really, really excited to have my special guest this evening. And while I wait for her, I'm just going to read you a little bit about who she is for those of you that have maybe not heard past interviews with her. My very special guest this evening is Linda Harto. She is a world-renowned golf landscape painter. Her work is displayed in the permanent collections of such legendary clubs as Augusta National, Laurel Valley, Pinehurst, and Pine Valley, in the personal collections of such notable golfers as Jack Nicklaus, Ray Floyd, and Reese Jones, and in the collections of the USGA Museum in Far Hills, New Jersey, and at the Morris Museum of Art in Augusta, Georgia. Her paintings of various holes at the Augusta National Golf Club are prized by collectors the world over. And in addition, she painted the first of her U.S. Open series in 1990, commissioned by the USGA. It was a 25-year series, which she completed in 2014, as well as a British Open Championship series from 1990 to 99. She was inducted in 2017 into the Lowcountry Golf Hall of Fame and has been honored with the Golf Digest Lifetime Achievement Award. So a lot of accolades and just a joy to have as a guest on my show. And I thought, what a great way to start off season 10 by having her come on and talk about some of the things that she has experienced in her journey. It's a little different area of golf than what we typically talk about here, but it's always been a lot of fun. And as I said, I'll bring her out as soon as she comes on. She just is just probably needing a few more minutes here. The other thing I want to mention, too, for those of you tuning into this show, you've probably come across my other show, which airs Tuesday mornings, and we just launched Season 9 of the Women of Golf this past Tuesday. My co-host on that is LPGA professional Cindy Miller, and she's also a member of the Legends Tour, and she has been teaching for many, many years as well, so she's a great advocate, if you will, of the women's game. And we have a lot of fun. We've, for a number of years, we've been interviewing a lot of the winners off of the tours this year, actually. And I'm going to not give you all the details right now, but formerly was the Symetra Tour, is now the Epson Tour, and that is kicking in this year. And there's a lot of great things. We're going to be talking with Mike Nichols in a few weeks, the Chief Business Officer, on the Women of Golf show. We're going to talk about, as we get ready to kick off a new season. Epson, of course, is a new title sponsor for the tour, so I know they're super excited to be in that position, and I believe that's going to be covered over the next 5 years is the plan. And a lot of exciting things going to be happening beginning right out of the gate this year. But I'll let Mike talk about that when he comes on the show. So you want to make sure you tune into that. And the best way to find that is, again, go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. So that airs Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the blogtalkradio.com network. And it is live as well. Cindy and I host that together. But you can go to that link if you're not able to join us during the live broadcast. You can tune in at any time. Just go to that link and scroll down to the on-demand sections, both for that show and for this show, Golf Talk Live, and you'll see all the previously aired shows so you can listen to them when it's convenient for you. As I said, there's a lot of other great ways to tune into the broadcast as well, and hope that you will listen to both shows. I think they're very informative. We have a lot of great guests. We've been interviewing a lot of the winners off of the now Epson Tour, which has we've been doing that for about 5 years. We've been speaking to a lot of the winners coming off of the tour, that as they work towards the race for the card, for their LPGA cards. And I had actually just share a very interesting story, which I've talked about before, but last season, just before the Christmas break, the LPGA had their Q series down in Alabama. They had two different courses. Both of them were part of the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, and it was very, very interesting. And I managed to go to the one that was Highland Oaks, which is in Dothan, Alabama, because I'm not too far away from there, and was able to watch these young ladies as they battled it out to earn their cards. And many of the players who didn't fall in the top 10 on, which now is the Epson Tour, but formerly Symetra Tour, that didn't make it into the top 10 race for the card, had to go and, in some cases, had to earn their chance to play out on the LPGA Tour. And what was really interesting is I had a chance over those 4 days to really look at some of the young ladies and how they practice, how they warm up and get ready for each of the day's events. And I got to tell you, talk about being impressed. These gals are just the epitome of professionalism. Not only are they very diligent in what they do, but they also are just always out there practicing, always working on their craft, And it is it's just amazing to watch them, for I guess for lack of better words. I just got a message, and I apologize for sort of cutting this short, this story. I'll have to share it another time, I guess. But it looks like our special guest is having a difficult time getting through the line. So I'm actually going to place that call to her and bring Linda on board that way. So just bear with me here, and we will endeavor to get our special guest on. So here we go.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening, Linda, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. This is Ted Odorico. How are you?
Oh, hi. I am fine. Thank you.
Well, good. I'm glad. My apologies. I understand. I just got a message and just understand that you were having a difficult time getting through to the number, so I thought I would call you instead. So,
well,
but
I'm glad you
I've
did.
Already done I've already done the intro and already introduced everybody to you. So I want to start off tonight, and I apologize for the difficult getting into the show, but I'm glad we're able to connect now. So Linda, what I wanted to talk to you about first was when we spoke last year, you had talked about participating in a golf art symposium. Back in October of last year at the Golf Heritage Society National Convention. That was supposed to take place in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. Were you able to attend that with, given everything going on with COVID, was that able to go through? And if so, maybe you could share a little bit of your experience there.
They did have the convention, and I was to participate virtually, you know, as on a Zoom call. And we got started with that, and everything was going fine, and then the hotel's internet went out. So that was the end of that, unfortunately. But we are planning to do a Zoom call with the Heritage Society anyway in the future, so hopefully that'll make up for it.
Apologies again. Yeah, it looks
Hi,
Linda?
Yes. Yes, hello. Hello? What the? Hello?
Yes, hi. Are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Hi, Linda?
Yes,
okay.
Hello.
Go ahead. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what's happened. But anyways, we got somehow disconnected in that. You were starting to tell us you were involved in a Zoom call with for the symposium, for the event. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, there were several of us that were involved in that couldn't make it to the actual event. And it got going very well, and then suddenly the hotel's internet was knocked out totally, so that kind of ended it abruptly. But we did plan a future Zoom call with the society anyway, so that will happen in the future.
Yeah, unfortunately, technology sometimes, and as we're experiencing here a little bit tonight,
really?
Sometimes can. I don't know. It's just one of those things, I guess. Well, we'll obviously get an update from you a little bit later on when that happens again. But unfortunately, as I said, sometimes those things happen. So let me ask you something a little bit. There are some other things that your career is kind of taking a little bit of a different focus right now on private commissions. Maybe you could give us a few examples.
I just completed one of a course in Las Vegas, TPC Summerlin, and that was for an individual that actually had a hole in one on that course. And I've done several projects for different courses, like Glenview. Last year they had an amateur event, which I did a painting for and some prints, and Jupiter Hills, I did something for their 50th anniversary. So That keeps me busy. You know, a lot of private clients and sometimes clubs. But that's what I'm doing now. I don't do too much tournament work anymore where I go to the actual events. Like U.S. Open I did for 25 years straight, so I thought it was a good time to retire from that.
Yeah, travel.
A nice even number.
Travel is nice, but there comes a point in time where you have to sort of put that one on the shelf. And as you said, you did it for 25 years. You've shared a lot of stories through your work and a lot of great paintings and that. So, I mean, I think you've certainly shared a lot in your collection. And which reminds me, I want to let the folks know that after the show, if they want to go and visit your website, it's harto.com, and it's spelled HARTOUGH.com. They can go and check it out. They can get an idea of some of the view some of the art, and they can also purchase prints as well right from the website. So definitely want to check that out, and we'll remind them again a little bit later on. So I also wanted to ask you about golf art in general. You're starting to notice that as a fine art genre, it seems to be growing. People are increasingly recognizing the beauty and value of it. So maybe explain, why do you think that's happening now? What is it that's changing from maybe what it's done in the past? Why do you think it's now being more recognized and that area is sort of growing?
Well, it's, you know, golf in general is growing, obviously, and it's just part of that. And because there's so many of us now concentrating on the fine art part of it, you know, the visual part of the game, people are starting to take notice and having shows, and some of the art museums and art centers, you know, they're putting on golf art shows, and they're quite popular. So we formed an organization, the Academy of Golf Art, back in 2003, and we've been adding members, and, you know, occasionally we have shows. It's been difficult in the last few years because of, you know, what. But,
but yeah, we won't mention
well,
that.
You know, But it's you know, a growing thing. A lot of people really like it. There's a lot of artists that really want to do golf art, and the organization is a great way to bring those people together and organize shows at different places. So,
much like when you first started out, you know, it's tough sometimes to get that exposure. So you guys, and of course, you were a founding trustee of the Academy. So obviously a group of you got together and formed the Academy, and now you offer the opportunity for other artists, some that maybe have been established a little bit more, but also new artists that maybe
There's quite a lot of new artists.
Right. So for somebody that wants to maybe become a part of the Academy, what's the best approach for them to do that?
First is to go to the academyofgolfart.org and just look it over. And then if they're interested, they can submit an inquiry, and we'll get back to them and see. We like to review their art, and, you know, everybody agrees, then we invite them to become a member.
Now, obviously, you're going to have some that maybe are very similar to other artists and things like that. Do you try to have a variety of different options? I mean, again, you don't want to necessarily just, you know, not include somebody. I mean, obviously, if somebody's out there and working much as the rest of you, but if you have, say, two or three that are kind of very similar, do you try to you know, I mean, obviously you want to welcome everybody, but do you try to have different types of genre and things like that so it's a sort of an overall representation in the Academy?
Well, as it turns out, most of them are significantly different, thankfully. And also we have different levels of membership, too. I mean, you can be a member and not even necessarily submit, or you can submit to a juried show. There's just all levels of it. I mean, we include everybody, really.
Sure.
Oh.
So what has been some of the different maybe genres or different artists that you've come across? And you don't necessarily have to – I mean, you're welcome to name individuals if you want, but what's been some of the other unique perspectives, let's say, that you've come across in the Academy?
Well, some people like to do the players themselves, you know, or the emotions of the swing. I mean, I've seen kind of abstract works that follow the motions. And, of course, there's always sculpture and even photography. I mean, we have some great photographers. And then there's abstract, which works as well. I mean, some of those are wonderful.
Now, does the Academy offer any sort of courses or seminars? As an example, let's say if somebody was interested, maybe has, you know, obviously some talent in something, but maybe is interested in pursuing something like that. Does the Academy have anything sort of seminars, you know, webinars, what have you, available for somebody to learn more about how to get into this sort of area of golf?
Well, that's definitely one of the purposes of forming the organization, but as yet we have not gotten to that point. And again, you know, recent development.
Sure.
Yeah, it just sort of makes it difficult to do those sorts of things. So they're on hold for the moment, but there's future in that, definitely. That was part of the plan.
Right, and that's what I say. I mean, that's something, obviously, you know, when things get a little bit easier here, let's say, for lack of better words, that's something that's definitely in the future of the Academy of Golf Art. I think that's fantastic, and it's interesting that you're able to attract so many different genres to the Academy, give a perspective to the craft, if you will.
Artists have a way of looking at things in different ways anyways, and the game of golf has landscape, it has people, it has every aspect of any art, so it fits in with anyone who's interested in the game, whether it's historical, any facet of it, really. It's amazing what people come up with, and it's really great. You know, I think it's an important part of the game, period, and it always has been. It's just been a little bit in the background historically, I'd say. You know, I think there was much more of it in England. There's many more historical paintings of golf in England than there are in this country. Not sure why, but that's the way it is.
Well, I think it's I think you'll start to see as you are noticing now more and more sort of coming into the forefront in that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mentioned earlier on, just prior to you coming on, a little bit about your collections, which have been in the USGA's museum in Far Hills, New Jersey, and then also in the Morris Museum of Art in Augusta, Georgia. Talk about the USGA museum first off. Give us an idea of some of the things that they'll find in there from your collection.
Well, they actually have the very first golf painting I did, which was the first painting I was commissioned by Augusta National to do, the 13th hole. That was in 1984. So they have that one and also the second one I did, which was the 16th hole. So they have some... Definitely some of my historical paintings. I mean, before that, I was painting all kinds of different subjects. But after that commission from Augusta, pretty much everything for the last 37 years or what has been golf. So
right.
I have quite a lot of things out there. They're in different private clubs and private collections. You know, they're on display in some clubs, like Pinehurst has 4 or 5 original paintings on display. Augusta has quite a lot of them on display. They're kind of everywhere. All the different U.S. Open venues, quite often the club would purchase the official painting that I did for that year. So they're everywhere.
Well, and as I mentioned, there are also, you have some of your work is in the Morris Museum of Art, which is in Augusta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I would assume that there'd be a number of pieces from Augusta National that would be featured in there as well, being it's in the same neck of the woods.
Most of them are in private collections, though. It depends on whether people donate them, you know, to these museums and things. But museums generally don't purchase directly.
Right.
So it's up to the collectors to kind of decide to do that.
Right, of course. So you've been doing this now in the Gulf area, as you said, roughly around 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you haven't done to this point that you'd like to do?
Well, there's a lot of courses on my bucket list, let's put it that way, and I'm trying to get to them. Places like Cyprus, and mm-hmm. there's still a lot of the Scottish and Irish courses I really like. I only do about 3 or 4 a year. They take so long to do.
Right.
That I'm working on it.
Well, I remember in past conversations that you talked about the length of time and the process,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you have to go through. So the fact that you're even doing, you know, 3 or so a year is amazing. I mean, when you think about what work goes in, and again, if
yeah.
you visit, you know, Linda's website, harto.com, you'll
mm-hmm.
see exactly what I'm talking about, and we'll remind them again at the end of the show. So you've got a few
yeah.
courses that are obviously on your bucket list to do that you've mentioned. Have you done any, or do you primarily just focus on the golf courses, or do you yourself, have you done individuals, like players, for instance? Is that something that you've done as well, or, you know, had an interest in?
No, I don't do too many players. When I was first starting out, I had a few people in my paintings, and then I suddenly decided they were not necessary to be there, so I quit putting them in. But yeah, once you put people into a scene like that, you kind of create a narrative, and
right.
if there's no people in it and it's just the landscape and the mood, then you put yourself in it, and it makes you experience it a lot more deeply. Let's see. It's sort of the metaphysical aspect of golf, which I think is pretty strong, actually. And I first became aware of that when I was in Scotland in, I'd say 88, around 88, 90, after going to quite a number of courses over there. I think you get a much more deeper sense of the historical feeling of golf, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happened, it was like being red-pilled, kind of. And I really was able to concentrate on being able to convey that in any painting that I did. So when I visit a course, I want to absorb what that course is like, how it feels, you know, and then the scene that I choose hopefully kind of sums that all up. It's just a process.
As I mentioned, you've talked about in the past the process of you know, completing whatever course that you're looking at or hole that you're looking at. What's the most difficult part? Obviously, you've been doing this for a long time, so I think the mm-hmm. painting aspect, I think you've obviously excelled that very well. But what's the hardest part of the journey? What is it, gathering the information? Is it sort of assessing
yeah.
what it is that you want to put down on canvas? Or
mm-hmm.
is it actually the task of doing it?
No, it's more all the preliminary. You know, it's visiting the course, having it at the right time, having while you're there, is the light right? sometimes, you know, it's a terrible week or whatever, and I'll have to go back another time, or I just don't get what I want. You know, I just have to find that lighting and that scene and get all the reference material I think I'll need, and then back at the studio, I have to kind of digest all that and figure out from there where I want to go with it. It's just a long process.
Right. Well, as I recall, it's several months of you know, not just gathering the information. Again, the circumstances have to be right, lighting and so forth, as you suggest.
Yeah.
But just getting that information, the images that you want to look at, and then you know, sort of creating in your mind's vision, if you will, exactly what you want to put down.
Right.
So that might take, you know, weeks, months, what have you. But typically, once you've decided, okay, this is what I'm going to do, what's the time frame on average? I mean, obviously, some are going to vary depending on the details. But typically, how long? Once you start to, I'm going to get it down on canvas, does it take you typically to complete a project?
Well, it totally depends on the size, mind you. But a typical size would be like a 24 by 42, and that would take several months at least. You can actually see some of those paintings in progress on the website. If you go there and look under the studio, there's works in progress. It shows you from start to finish. And there's so much detail in them that it just takes a very long time, especially if you're doing something like St. Andrews when you've got all those buildings. Oh, my God, that's really a task.
Well, and I imagine, too, if you're doing a course, let's say that's during the fall, where you've got in the background, you've got the leaves with multiple colors. You know, I think if everything's sort of green, it's a little bit, I would think, a little bit easier for you than if you've got a lot more detail going on in the background, like buildings, as you suggest, or, you know, fall leaves and things like that. That adds a whole, you know, different perspective, if you will. Typically, once you start that process of actually putting it on canvas, you know, how much time do you spend on average a day, let's say? Like, is it something that once you start every day, I'm going to, you know, 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours? Like, do you find sometimes if you go too long, you kind of get burnt out, you've got to, okay, I need a little bit of a break, and maybe, you know, take a day or two and regroup, and what do you typically do once you start?
Yeah.
Is it like,
well, I really like to stay with it as much as I can, because you kind of go into a kind of a zone, and I'll work on it every day. But, you know, there's other things that have to be done in life, unfortunately, so sometimes it has to be put aside for grocery shopping or whatever, you know. It just happens that way, but I like to stay with it pretty much as much as possible, and not leave it for like days or, you know, even a week. But it just depends. If you got to, you got to. If you have to travel or do something else, you have to put it aside, and then when you come back, you got to go through the whole process again to remember where you are.
Right.
So it's not something you want to do, but unfortunately that's the way life is, and you sort of have to.
Well, I know obviously from a visual standpoint, you can see kind of where you left off as you're going through that process. But do you also make notes along the way? Like, do you say, you know, as you're going along, do you kind of keep, like, I don't want to say journal, but do you say, okay, tomorrow I want to make sure that, you know, I'm focusing on this. Do you also do that as you go through the process, or you just pretty much go by visual?
Well, there are sections of the painting that I know will take a certain amount of time, and because of the way I paint kind of in a, what do you call it, a la prima style, where I work a whole area at once and finish it while it's still wet. So that has to be done within a day or two. So I have to sort of gauge what area I want to get done and make sure I have no interruptions or I don't have to do something else, because I can't have that paint dry. I have to be able to finish it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's when you see, if you look at a work in progress on the website, you'll see how each section kind of develops by itself and the rest of the canvas is blank, which really freaks out most artists. They don't, it's not the way you're supposed to paint. You're supposed to work the whole thing up at once, but I don't do that. I work section by section and the rest of the canvas is blank.
Was there a particular reason why you chose to approach it from that way? The reason why I'm asking, if that's typically,
yeah,
as you just mentioned, not the way it's normally done, is it just that's what works best for you, or that's the way you just decided you wanted to approach it? What was the reason
behind that? It just developed by itself, really. It's because I like to work the paint wet. So in order to, mm-hmm, do that and still do all that detail, that means I have to do each section. You know, I can't work the whole painting up at once. I mean, there's just no way to do it.
Right.
It just developed by itself.
Linda, when you start a painting, do you typically, you know, as you said, you're sectioning it off, do you start with the easier parts typically first and then work your way up to the more detailed, or the other way around?
No, I actually work from distance. In other words, the furthest thing away to the closest thing. So the first thing is the sky, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then anything that's in that sky has to be kind of roughed in, the edge at least, because the whole surface is sort of sculptural. I use quite a lot of paint. So, mm-hmm, I don't know. You have to look on the website to see what I mean. But it's so I just keep working towards the foreground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just keep working the sky, then the trees in the sky, and then the rest of the trees and whatever's with them, and then finally down to the foreground.
Well, it's definitely a journey in the – I know you can attest to that. Have there been moments, and I'm sure there's got to be some, during the process where, I don't want to say overwhelmed, but it's just, and obviously you're not going to take on a task if you don't feel confident that you're going to be able to do it successfully, but have there been projects or moments throughout your career where you've dove into a particular project and just said to yourself, wow, this is even more than I imagined it was going to be. Has there ever been moments like that in your career?
Well, every one is a journey, really. And each part of it, you have to analyze and figure out how to make all the parts work. I think that's really one of the most difficult parts of working the way I do is bringing all those different sections together without, you know, there being a difference in them. You know, just working it, mm-hmm, totally all together without being able to see it until the end. It's quite a challenge, actually. And I'm amazed at myself that I can do it. Another thing that amazes me sometimes is how I manage to work in elements that don't really fit into the scene, but somehow I'm able to get them in there. And that's manipulating space a little bit. And it's just strange. You know, when you're taking pictures and I think of the postage stamp, you know, and Troon for one thing, how you face the hole from the T, and there's the island of Erin over to the left, but it's not in the scene, and I'm thinking, I want that in the scene. So I move the whole island over in the background, and nobody knows the difference, you know, because when you're standing there, you're aware of all that anyway. I mean, you're very much aware of all that, and just because it doesn't fit into that one little frame doesn't mean that you don't know it's there.
Right.
And so if I move things around a little bit, I manage to get them in and nobody knows the difference. And I'm happy and they're happy, so it works.
Now, well, of course, the more you can get in. Mm-hmm. Now, have you had the opportunity or taken the opportunity to do that numerous times? I mean, obviously, you've done it more than once, but is that that, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm amazed. Like I said, sometimes I'm amazed at what I'm able to get into a scene and have it work perfectly fine perspectively.
Well, you obviously have an eye and a flair mm-hmm. for doing something like that, because I'm sure that's not an easy task to be able to do. Can you give us maybe another example of one of your works that you had to do? I mean, obviously you have many, but another one in particular that mm-hmm. that you're you know, fond of, that you did something very similar. Maybe give us an example mm-hmm. of that.
Oh, I've done that with, what did I do that with? 13th Hole at Augusta. I know I did that one. I wanted both bridges in it, and I had to manipulate that one a little bit. And then I did one of Shinnecock, the 16th hole, and I liked a certain way the fairway looked, but when I was in standing in one spot, I couldn't. One of the buildings got in the way in the background. But if you walked over to the other side of the fairway and took the same scene, it was in the right place. So I combined the two perspectives. So that building just moved over, and everything lined up just perfectly. And also there was a windmill way in the background, and I moved that over and stuck it in there. So, yeah, I kind of liked how that worked out. It was one of my better paintings, I thought.
Well, I think it's always good to modify things a little bit to fit your mm-hmm. eye, for lack of better words.
Another thing I do is I'll leave out things that I don't think are important mm-hmm. or minimize them to the point where they're there, but you really don't see it. Like, the 9th hole of Pebble Beach, behind the 10th green, there's a big old house there.
Yeah.
And it's really distracting because when the light hits it really strong, and that's all you see is the house,
right?
Not the hole. So I just put the whole house in shadow, and it disappears totally. You don't even see it.
I'm sure the owner is probably thinking, what happened to my house?
Well,
but
too bad.
But it worked well.
And
for
then,
the painting,
you
so.
Know, when you're doing St. Andrews, there's so much stuff that is extraneous,
right.
You know, that you just kind of minimize it or leave it out, or, you know, things like that. I don't want to get every single detail in there. It's too distracting. You know, you want to not be too literal. If you're too literal, you don't get the feeling.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you pointed out earlier, you know, about having, you know, players or people in the scene, if you will, again, that mm-hmm. detracts from the landscape. You know, and that's where kind of photography can kind of pick up. I mean, obviously, if you're shooting a photograph, a particular area and there happens to be somebody in it, it's a little bit different. You know, you can certainly manipulate things, but not the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing a painting, you know, unless it's something that, you know, somebody specifically wants for a private collection, and, mm-hmm. you know, let's say they're little grandchild's, you know, walking across the green and they want their grandchild in it, you know, that's a different story. But I can see where it would be very distracting. And again, by minimizing, you know, like say it's St. Andrews where you've got the buildings in the background, you know, there's number one, there's a lot of detail for you to focus on, but you can certainly mm-hmm. minimize it to a point that people still see that they're there, but it's not a sharp crispness to it, if you will. So I get that.
Right.
And that certainly makes a lot of sense. Is there, as you look back, and I know you've got a repertoire of many, many pieces that you've done. What are your top three favorites?
Oh, boy. Woo!
That's a tough one. And in case anybody's listening that may have done, I don't want to deflect and say, but that you enjoy. Let's look at from a different perspective. What were the three, let's say, top three that you really enjoyed the most doing that gave you the most, you know, pleasure and enjoyment putting them together, or challenges even, if you want?
Yeah. Well, one early on was the Royal Dornach. I mean, it was just such a special experience just being there. And it has such a haunting feeling there, which I really, really, really loved that one. And where else? Royal County Down was special. My husband and I were there. We spent a week there. We rode horses in the mountains of Mourne. And, you know, it's just a special experience to be able to not just visit the course but also know the whole area around it and experience it. Just makes it all that more special. And I guess the 13th hole of Augusta was kind of an ultimate challenge in a way, because there's just so much in that scene. And then you have all the different blooms, you know, of all the different dogwoods and red buds and azaleas and all that. And I photographed that hole so many times, so many different years. And it was different every year. So one year it just happened to be the best of all. And that's the one that I did, you know, that painting was such a success. And I was pleased with being able to capture everything that I liked about the hole in one painting, finally.
I can imagine that it could be very frustrating at times if you're going to a venue and, you know, the plant life is not cooperating with the image.
Right.
You know, things aren't quite in bloom in the way you'd like. And, you know, especially a place like Augusta National where you've got the azaleas. I mean, they're obviously very beautiful. But if you don't hit it the right week and maybe it's a little cool and they're not opening up yet as much.
It can be every year.
Yeah. And so I can certainly see where that would be a challenge for you. Is there anything that, besides venues, is there anything else that you have thought about that you would like to do, certainly in the same area, if you will, of body of work, but something that you'd like to try differently, maybe approaching a scene differently, what have you, that you haven't done yet?
That's hard to say. I did do one at Augusta that I thought was a very different approach. And it was fairly well received, but most people want to see, you know, what they think they know the hole is. And this one was the 18th hole at Augusta, and there was this beautiful live oak on the side there. And, you know, so I did that painting with the live oak in the front, which really it's a painting of the live oak. and if you knew that course, you'd know just by looking in the background, of course, you can see the clubhouse and the 18th green and all that. But the most of the painting is the live oak.
Right.
And it's just not your normal scene. But,
well,
that one just happened to be one I wanted to do for myself. And, you know, you can look at it on the website. You'll see what I mean.
Yeah, I was just going to say that would be maybe something for the private collection.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people we've had that have ordered and said, I hit my ball right there. And they're not supposed
Right. Probably, I'm sure many have ricocheted off that live oak, and so it's surprising it's still alive. But what you know, but again, that makes again it goes to, and I'm trust me, I'm certainly no artist, but you know, it goes to an artist's interpretation. I mean, you don't want to, you know, one of the things I guess the criticisms I would have is if you just do the same thing all the time. You know, you see sometimes some artists will do something and don't really kind of change. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everybody, you know, has their own way of interpreting things. But I would think that from time to time, it would be kind of nice to just say, you know what, I'm going to do something different. You know, even though this is, as you said, the 18th hole at Augusta, I'm going to kind of put the tree in the forefront because it's something, it's a unique tree, it's, you know, whatever. And I think it would be very interesting. And, it's kind of refreshing, really, to see that you're looking at it from that same perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, I think one thing great about it, though, is that the landscape at all these courses is different. And if you're aware of the differences and you can pick out elements in it, any landscape, you know, of course, to me, the trees are everything, and also the lighting is the most important part. The lighting makes the scene for me. So I have to just find that lighting. It could be at dawn. It could be late afternoon. It could be any time of the day, but I have to sit with that scene until I find the right light for it. And sometimes that requires a different time of year. Because, you know, it changes significantly. I was always wanted to paint the first hole at St. Andrews, but I could never find the right light for it. And finally, you know, I was there in May of that one year, and I finally was able to capture it. So
are there certain seasons? Yeah, are there certain seasons that typically, I mean, obviously, you know, the dead of winter is not going to be something that you're necessarily going to want to do. But are there certain times, is it better, you know, earlier in the spring, you know, is the summer? Again, it depends on where you are and what course you're doing.
Yeah.
But are there certain times of the year that you have found typically work best for what you're doing?
It depends on the course. But usually, like over in the UK or Ireland, I like August through November. And in this country, mostly, I still like late summer or early spring. I mean, it just depends on the course, really. I mean, sometimes it depends on the actual tree makeup of the course, if they have, if they're known for their spring bloom, like Augusta. I mean, you wouldn't want to paint Augusta in another season, you know. It just doesn't, it isn't the same. So it just totally depends on the course. And usually, if I have never been there, I ask the members or the people commissioning, what's your favorite season? What do you think of that shows off your course the best? When do you think it looks the best? So we make decisions sometimes that way too.
Very good. Are there any special events that are coming up that you're going to be participating in this season? Obviously, again, we've gone through a little bit of a different scenario the last couple of years. Things have been canceled. Is there any special events or things that you're looking forward to this season that is coming down in the next maybe few months or so?
No, I think I'm pretty busy with the commission, so there isn't any particular events coming up, unfortunately. But I have some interesting projects that we're talking about right now, but I can't talk about too much, except for that they're involved with the St. Andrews in Northern Ireland. So that's kind of exciting project. So we'll see. But that should keep me busy for quite a while.
Well, we'll have to keep a lookout for that on the website.
Yeah.
So for those of you tuning into the show, if you want to learn more about Linda Harto and what mm-hmm. she does, you can visit her website at Harto, and it's HARTOUGH.com. You can view probably most or all of her work there. And if you're interested, you can actually purchase prints of her work mm-hmm. Available through there as well. And as she also mentioned earlier, there are some works in progress that are you can actually see sort of the journey of different works that she's doing right there on her website. So definitely check that out, harto.com. That's HARTOUGH.com.
And if you sign up for our emails, we have a lot of Guess the Winner contests on all the PGA Tour. So you can guess the winner of a different tour event and win a print.
Very good. And then for those mm-hmm. of you that maybe are artistically inclined and maybe you're interested in reaching out to the Academy of Golf Art, you can do so by mm-hmm. Visiting their website. It's academyofgolfart.org. And you can communicate through their website as well. Maybe you've got something that you'd like to share and maybe become a member of that organization as well. So two great places to go. But go visit Linda's website after the show, harto.com, and check out a lot of her great works. Linda, thank you very much for joining me on the show.
Well,
I apologize once again for some of the earlier glitches in the evening, but I think we managed to get everything out. Hopefully we'll get that nailed down for next week's guest, but I thank you very much for joining me, and it's always an interesting discussion. I'm going to have to get my artistic juices flowing here, and I know it's not going to be anywhere near as good as yours, but I'll see what I can do, and maybe I'll submit something into the Academy of Golf Art. But Linda,
all right.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's always a pleasure, and I always look forward to you coming back.
Well, I appreciate all your good questions, and it was really a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Well, you have a great week, weekend, and great rest of year, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thank you very much for joining me tonight on Golf Talk Live. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right, that was my very special guest, Linda Harto. She is a world-renowned golf landscape painter. And again, I apologize to the audience as well as her for the technical issues a little bit earlier on. I think we got them a little bit nailed out towards the end. Hopefully it wasn't too much of the show interrupted. But and obviously she had some difficulty getting in at the beginning of the show. But we managed to work it out, and I hope you enjoyed the show. You can go and listen to, if you missed some of the show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive and scroll down to the on-demand section. The show in its entirety will be there just momentarily, and you can listen to the recorded version, and you can just skip through the early part there where I had a little bit of technical difficulty, and you'll hear most of the conversation. And don't forget to go to harto.com is her website, and it's HARTOUGH.com, and you can check out a lot of the body of her works. Her paintings are absolutely exquisite, and if you're interested in getting a print copy of some of her works, you can purchase it right there on the website as well. Might make a great gift for that golfer in your family. Thanks, everybody, for joining me on first show of Season 10. I will be back next week right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless everybody.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. Ted would like to thank this evening's special guest for joining him on the show. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. You can also listen to Golf Talk Live on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. Be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, send an email to Ted at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.